Peter turned around and put my arms over his shoulders. "Now it's just us," he said, embracing me. I kissed him softly on the forehead. In the sky above us, a big hawk appeared, gracefully following the path of the river below. When it saw us, it flapped its brown wings wildly to change its course, then appeared over the other side of the mountains, which, to us, was the other side of the world. I took a deep breath. "I feel like we've finally come home." Peter nodded. "This is the world we were all born into." I took his hand and I looked out at the valley and forest all around us. "Amazing feeling to be so alone in such an isolated place, isn't it?" I said. "It is. The nearest house is a good 3 days' walk from here. This time of the year, most people leave the mountains alone and stay inside until the spring." I looked up and saw some clouds drifting over the ranges. They were moving fast. There must have been a lot of wind on the tops. "What do you think will happen to us?" Peter wondered. I thought for a while before responding. "I don't know. I really can't picture the future." "Yes, because it's totally unknowable." "Yes, it's actually as though we have no future, just a great timeless void, an infinite mist," I said. Back at the hut, I rekindled the fire and made 2 cups of tea, which I carried over to Peter, who was sitting on a rock near the river. "This is absolutely amazingly beautiful, isn't it?" I looked at the crystal clear water which cascaded down from the mountains. The big round rocks, worn smooth by the current, shimmered in the sun. "Yes, and vast parts of this island are like this too." Pete leaned back onto the rock. "I just feel so lucky to be here, to actually live in this beauty," I said. I looked at the rocky outcrops on the other side of the river, the dense forest in the distance, and the old trees nearby. When my tea was finished, I made another cup. Yeah, no clock, but I guessed it was probably 10 in the morning. I thought of my colleagues, Virginia and Rose, who would be sipping their coffees at the table by the window in the staff room. We were now in such a different world. After my initial elation, an uncomfortable feeling was creeping to the surface, a kind of realization that sent a flash of panic through my body. It was the one thought that clashed with all my fantasies of living peacefully in the wilderness. The "what now?" thought. What was I going to do next? I thought of things to do and I remembered I hadn't seen the toilet facilities. The long drop was built 70 meters from the hut. It was a deep hole with a wooden structure on the top. The only thing about it that resembled a modern toilet was the white seat. A soggy roll of paper sat in the corner. I lifted the lid and looked into the hole. The smell was so horrible that I quickly closed the lid. If I sit on that toilet with the door closed, I'll be suffocating, I thought. I felt a little bit apprehensive. The hut and the toilet was worse than I expected, and I forced myself not to think about the months ahead. I jumped into action instead. The hut desperately needed cleaning, so I collected a bucket of water from the river, found an old towel, and started washing the grimy walls, dirty windows, and even the stains on the mattresses. We would definitely sleep in a tent, as the hut obviously belonged to the rats and mice, but in bad weather, we could at least shelter in a clean hut. Peter saw me running back and forth with buckets. "Why don't you sit down for a minute?" he asked. But I had been running around for years and I found it difficult to sit still. I took the dirty frying pan from the shelf and scrubbed it clean with sand from the river. Then I did the same with the cutlery and the billy. Next, I searched around for the best place to camp, eventually pitching the tent underneath some trees with a fly sheet strung over the top as an extra roof. The tent would be our bedroom, the hut our living room during bad weather, the river was our tap, our fridge, shower, dishwasher and washing machine, and the whole valley was our garden. Our home in the wilderness was there. I started to feel better about the place. Several times Peter offered to help me, but dreading the moment when all the chores were done, I preferred to do everything on my own. I needed to fill up the empty day. Finally, after I had tied a rope between the trees for a washing line, I sat down. I couldn't think of anything else to do. What time could it be? I wondered. The sun was just touching the top of the mountains, and it felt as though it was 4 o'clock. It could also be 3 o'clock. The day seemed just endless. This was the one thing all our hiking trips and training had not prepared me for. Boredom. Being occupied with walking every day was relatively easy when compared to just living. If I had been a hiker, I would have shouldered my pack and begun to walk to the next hut. If I had been a hunter or a fisher, I would have declared it a day and walked back to the car. But I could go nowhere. I joined Peter, who was calmly reading an old newspaper in the sun. I think it will be a bit of an adjustment in the beginning, don't you? I sounded far more coherent than I felt. Oh yes, a major adjustment, Peter nodded. The mind needs to calm down. It could take days to ease into the rhythm of this place, maybe even weeks. Those first days were indeed a major adjustment on many levels. Sometimes I felt comfortable and at home, other times I felt very insecure about the future. But mostly I felt bored and restless. I no longer had a job, a project or stimulation like social contacts, email, music and all the rest. It felt as though I was going through withdrawal symptoms. My mind was running too fast, my thoughts were all over the place and endless memories flashed by. My head felt chaotic compared to the silence of nature, whose gentle rhythm was much slower than my busy self. I was glad to be able to talk with Peter about the difficult process of slowing down. He hadn't ever lived in the wilderness before either, but he did seem to understand the nature of the mind a little better than I did. Even though he appeared tranquil compared to me, he said he knew exactly how I felt. He had not found a million chores to do, but he had read all of the old newspapers and magazines in the hut from cover to cover. His suggestion was that we just go through the boredom and restless and do nothing for a while. Nothing. That was the last thing I wanted to do. Nothing meant boredom, the dreaded void, the horrible emptiness. Nothing was the unknown. I had discovered I was afraid of nothing. I would be forced to face this fear in the weeks to come.